Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
At the Home Depot, we improve things. This holiday season, we've improved Black Friday. Instead of one day of crazy, we've lowered prices now, and they'll stay low all season. From decorations to dishwashers, wreaths to ratchet sets. So sleep in. You're not going to miss Black Friday. Not one little bit. Black Friday improved. The best prices of the year already here at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details.
They could break here, Chelsea. This could be the moment. Frank Lampard for Chelsea. It's Carvalho to his right. Lampard for the title. Lampard! It's 2-0! It's Chelsea's championship! And 50 years of waiting have come to an end!
Lampard comes out to Essien!
Oh my goodness!
It's a counter-attack. Here's Didier Drogba. And now get down the middle. Drogba goes!
Chelsea 2, Arsenal 0, and Didier Drogba has it.
Drogba
in the centre!
McCoy just came from behind him, back Magnus. Many of the ball, he's got this pitch, he's got it, he's got it, stretch it, stretch it.
Possibly bleak as this.
Drogba! Madness. Never ended up in McDonald's. And I have had a trophy in long time.
Hello. Welcome to Chelsea Hour. My name is Meads and I'll be your host for this one. Joined by three very special guests. We've got Dan Soff in the building. What are you saying?
What's up, bro? How you doing?
Yeah, I can't complain. Jay, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm all good, man. Can't complain. Yeah.
Shemi, what's happening?
I'm good, bro. I'm good.
Please refrain from leaning back because we don't want to see that Barcelona top, especially after, 09. I'm disgusted, but hey.
Yeah.
I mean, he's wearing the op shirt. If there's any European ops, it's Barcelona. Man. I don't know what man is on today. I don't know what man is on.
Hey, I got the most kits here, and I've seen some wavy Barcelona kits. I would never ever.
You can't, ever, bro. You ever. Can't. After Iniesta, there's no way. After impossible. I just
have to dash the end of being Shemi, bro.
I ain't saying that. But no more. In fact, you're on a 5-minute ban. I'm joking. but yeah, we've got quite a few things to cover, man. It's been an interesting couple of days for us. Obviously, we played two games since the last podcast. I guess we have to start with Southampton. Dan, I kind of want to hear your thoughts on this. Because you've been pretty vocal. In regards to, I guess, Chelsea's setup and how we play and generally how you think our attacking composition's been. But what do you think? And what did you think of the game, I guess?
Of the game, we played amazing football, some amazing football first half. One touch football first half. Havertz was involved in it. It was all good. We all thought that this is why we spent the money. Yeah. We thought it was coming together.
Yeah.
However, obviously, we know how it went. Long story short, it was similar to if we take our minds back to the Spurs game in the Carabao Cup. When we started the first half, it was great. And then the manager made the change and we couldn't resolve it. Mm. And I think, again, second half, again, we played off the pitch. They had so many chances. Kepa was in goal. It's a madness to me they didn't even beat us. Do you know what I'm saying? With Kepa in goal.
You know what? You know what? When we talk about personnel, we always talk about individuals. And when Lampard talks about individuals and individual errors, we always kind of turn our nose up at it because it is a bit annoying. But you can't account for Kepa. Kepa is an anomaly. He's one of those players. He's got a player that you realise, you think, okay, you know what? If he's on your team, anything can happen. Anything. And it's anything, usually anything being bad. It's not anything good. You know what I mean? You're handicapped. You're handicapped. And that's why when people talk about, oh, but you can't do anything, it's Kepa. I'm like, well, you can't. Just don't pick him. Just don't pick him. It's so strange. But anyway.
But also, let's remember, Peter Cech is in the squad.
We'll talk on that later on and what that means for the club, what that means for the squad.
So quickly, on the Southampton game, in fact, quickly on Kepa, he actually made some saves that game. So I'm saying it could have been worse. Like, the bar is low. I know the bar is low, but he made some saves that game.
Some okay-ish saves, bro.
Yeah. So you asked me about the setup, and I think what you was alluding to is I don't necessarily think we need four attackers. Mm. The past couple of games, obviously Mount is a big topic. He's played left wing, and I think both of the games, like, okay, he worked hard, but I don't think you can think about, okay, yeah, Mount did this in the Southampton game, or Mount did that. Like, Pulisic had great moments. Havertz had great moments. Werner always kind of runs in behind. He's always like, he can get shots off even when there's no time. But I think with Mount, it's like, okay, what are you adding apart from, you know, working hard? And so, like, for me, I'm thinking, especially the way I see Pulisic, Havertz and Werner combined, I'm thinking, okay, you can just literally play these three as attackers. Ziyech will come later, but I'm saying right now, you could literally play these three as attackers, play three in midfield to make you a little bit more solid. Because the Southampton game, I watched it again, and it wasn't just the second half that Southampton had chances.
That's awesome.
They had chances in the first half as well. So I think there's still a lot of work to be done with this Chelsea team.
It's funny, because whenever we talk about our midfield composition, again, we are always concerned, whether it's Kante and Kovacic, whether it's Kante, Jorginho, whether it's Jorginho and Kovacic, we always feel like, look, if people start applying pressure, it's a problem. In that double pivot, if people start applying pressure, it's very, very difficult to stop the flow and stem the flow, considering that you're pretty much playing with four attackers. So, yeah, it's really, really poor. Jay, you know, we always talk about the 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1. But even aside from, you know, how we deal with pressure, how we deal with teams coming onto us, what were certain things that you were disappointed with in that 3-3 draw against Southampton, more than anything?
That is stressed.
I watched it today, innit? I only finished watching it like about 20 minutes ago. And like when I was watching the first half, again, like what Dan said, to echo what Dan said, like we played some crazy, crazy football, like proper good on the eye, good end product, like decision making was there. It all looked good. I think what for me disappointed in terms of in the midfield was just we were sloppy on the ball like first half. Like even though we were good in the first half, there was a lot of times Kante was like he was winning the ball, but then the pass afterwards, oh my god, like he must have 4 or 5 times he must have given it straight back to Southampton. And then Jorginho as well, who's been working his socks off. I'm not going to lie. The last 3-4 games, that guy's been working his socks off, bro. And he's been trying his hardest in the midfield. I'm not going to lie. I'm not a massive fan. Everybody knows that. But Jorginho's trying his best to do what he can in the midfield to kind of, you know, keep control of the game, make sure there's options. He's telling people where to pass the ball. But there's only so much he can do if the setup isn't right. Do you know what I mean? And I just feel like with Kante and Jorginho at the moment, they're trying to make the best of a bad situation at the moment in terms of in midfield, because I feel like they can be told what they're told by the manager. They can only do what they're told by the manager. And, you know, if Lampard's telling Jorginho to press and go, like, beyond where he's meant to be, for me, like, you see him up near the goalkeeper, you see him on the striker sometimes. Like, he's pressing crazy. But I don't feel like he's got the ability to even do that. Like, it's cool, he's willing to do it, but in terms of the situation that it puts him in, when, for example, I showed you like the goal earlier, he's gone to go and press Romelu, but the fact is, he's not quick enough to get there. So now he's come out of the space, Romelu's knocked it long, he can't get back. It just looks crazy, bro. Kante as well can't get back. It's not just Jorginho, Kante as well. Kante's struggling to get back, bro. So I feel like I watched Jay Adams, sorry Mies, I watched Jay Adams and Ings, yeah, in that attack. I kid you not, I was watching it for about 20 seconds before I saw Jorginho and Kante come back into the picture.
Yeah.
Scary stuff. Scary stuff.
So with that, again, so you've segued nicely into tactics. You know, everyone, I guess when Frank first came in, he said, you know, high energy, high work rate, high pressing. And again, that kind of alludes to why people say Mount's in the team, etc. Do you think, and is it possible that, yes, Frank may want this high octane, high energy, high pressing game. Is it just not clear for everyone to see that we just don't have the players to do what he wants? You know what I mean? Is it not clear? Because I'm looking at Jorginho press up against Romelu, press up against Vestergaard, press up. I'm thinking, what is going on? Yes, in certain instances, it's good in a sense that you pen a team in. But when you've got a team, especially against a team like Southampton, who can really play, and they could play around your press very, very comfortably, you're in deep trouble. You're in deep, deep trouble. Shemi, again, back to structure, back to team organisation. I find it quite difficult to criticise Jorginho. Again, like Jay said, especially in that game, he tried his hardest. I thought he played quite decently. And he was trying his best to hold the midfield together. But again, structure. Shemi, what are your thoughts on the game? And I guess how we let the match slip?
Yeah, so in terms of how we let the match slip, again, individual errors, that speaks for itself. We already know about that. But yeah, game management, man. Our game management is just seriously lacking right now. And for me, I'm looking at Lampard's game, in-game management a little bit. And I'm thinking he could have... So, for example, the Reece James substitution, I felt, could have come a bit sooner. So I believe he brought Reece James on around the 80th minute. Personally, I would have brought him around about 10 minutes sooner because after we got the goal, things were a bit flat. And I feel like Havertz was wavering a little bit towards the end because he mashed a lot of work during the game. So I would have brought Reece James on a little bit sooner just to shut up the midfield a little bit more. And also, one thing I noticed as well is that after we went back in front with Havertz's goal, I feel like the game just went a bit flat. Like, both sides just kind of went flat for a little bit until Southampton obviously got the equaliser at the end. And I feel like a change in the tactics, I would have taken off Pooley for Hudson just to inject a bit more life into the game. And because, you know, Hudson's going to come, he's going to take on 1v1, he's going to dribble, he's going to inject a bit of life into the game in general on the ball. So I feel like that would have been a nice change as well, just to kind of inject a bit of life into the game and kind of just make sure we don't fall into that trap of going through the phases, if you know what I'm trying to say, and actually make sure we manage the situation properly, which we weren't able to do, unfortunately. So yeah, man, I felt like he could have made those substitutions a bit quicker. I feel like obviously on the goal with Reece James giving away a foul. But another thing I've noticed as well is that I feel like we give away too many silly free kicks in wide areas. I feel like every single game, we can't go through a game without giving at least 2 to 3 wide free kicks all the time. And it just puts pressure on us all the time, every single time. And we're not even the best at defending set pieces. So we need to iron that out, like, ASAP. Even the game against the Champions League against, oh, remind me who we played, Seville. Yeah. We gave them a couple wide free kicks, which was dangerous. Mendy had made a really good save. So yeah, something we need to cut out, man, in terms of game management, and just really make sure we're able to go through games with the lead, because we can't make it a thing where we have to score 4 to win a game. It's not acceptable.
Yeah, I feel like I guess Hakim Ziyech, he made his debut, Premier League debut, and his long-awaited return from injury as a sub appearance. But I felt like he even said that he alluded to it. Timo Werner alluded to it. Havertz alluded to it. In Germany, obviously, defense. They said how I think Werner said in Germany, defenses win titles, defenses win games. And he's like, we just can't go through games winning, like scoring three goals.
For me,
it don't work like that. And it just seems like he seemed. The thing that I love about Werner, he's a very honest person. He's very a realist, and he just keeps it real. He can't help but keep it real. You know what I mean? That's a refreshing character. That's why I really like him. But you could see he's so frustrated with what he's seeing, and I think personally. Maybe it's a bit too soon for me to say, but I'm not sure he really rates what he's seeing over here.
I don't think he does, but me, don't forget, he's come from the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
We know this league.
We know the league.
The league to go to see goals.
Yeah.
To see the fourth fours. And even him from the Bundesliga has come here and is like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
That's crazy. So it's mad.
It's mad.
And to be fair.
Exactly. It's mad for him to come with that league is mad open to come here and say, wow, it's the same thing. It's the same shit, rah. Like, you know what I mean? He must have been rah. This is calm. It's cat.
And to be fair, after the West Brom game, he did mention how it was tough coming up against their physical defenders. He mentioned how like Lewis Dunk and them lot, they were quite physical. His tools was a bit different for him. So he did mention that, you know, in that sense, it's a bit more tough. But I agree with you at the same time.
You know what it is with Werner, though? I think with Werner, yeah, what he's seeing, yeah, is the mistakes, bro. Because, you know, in Bundesliga, there'll be like 8 goals, but they'll all be mad goals, like bopping man off the pitch, like gaps and all sorts and through balls and that. But my man seeing
Individual
like kick it back to Kepa sliding over it, he's thinking, nah, bro, like I'm not running past three man, banging it bottom corner for you to be doing that nonsense.
Jermaine, quickly on that, when you think about Mies was talking about earlier, we do the high press and that's as a means to make chances.
Yeah.
Goal. It wasn't through a hike.
It was
through ingenuity from Werner, or it was through a long ball from Jorginho, or it was through them playing the ball through the middle for the third goal. Now, what was interesting is after the game, Lampard came out and said, game management. He wanted people to do longer balls up at the end just to keep it through. But do you know what? I was watching the game, and even the commentator said it. He said, why is Chilwell pumping why does he keep on doing long balls? I'm sure at this point in the game, Lampard would want him to keep the ball because it keeps on coming back the other way. So, even Lampard's... Go on, Mead.
It's so frustrating because I think he's just talking crap. I think he's just trying to deflect away from his instructions that were failing. Because he wanted... If he's saying that he wanted them to pump the ball... For me, if you're trying to manage a game, you try and get your foot on the ball... And retain the ball. They were launching it. They were launching it. So how is he saying? And then he says after the game, I wanted to get in behind a bit more, launch it a bit more. What are you saying?
Like, he loves deflecting. He loves it.
Doesn't make any sense, bro. Like, that's what I'm trying to say. The deflection.
Lampard deflected shots.
He loves it, bro.
Lampard through his career, loads of deflected shots, and that's his management.
The maddest thing is, Kovacic wasn't on the bench game, innit?
Yeah,
I wasn't.
He wasn't, was he?
Mm.
Yeah, but like, because that would have been interesting to see if he did change that to a.
Mount isn't a winger.
No, but that's what I was going to say. The thing is, he's always talking about how fit Mount is, and he can run forever and all of this nonsense. He can play like 550 games in a flipping row and that. So why not play Mount in centre mid? Give us a little bit more legs. Protect fucking Jorginho, bro, who's been working his socks off the whole flipping game.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Dealing with Shea Adams and Ings dropping deep to come and press him as well because they know.
That's a quick good point. Again, Southampton played two strikers. If we remember last season, Duncan Ferguson against Everton, where he put Richarlison and what's his name up front? Exactly, and DCR up front. But also Sheffield United. Do you remember when we played their two strikers?
Yeah.
For some reason, when we're playing against two strikers, I'm worried, especially in this 4-2-3-1. Mm-hmm. I'm worried because they play right in between the defence and the two in the pivot. And when the ball comes into them, then it's open.
The thing is as well, these teams that we're playing now, and a lot of the teams in the Premiership now that are doing the pressing game and that, they're doing it, especially the teams at the lower end of the table and that, no disrespect to any of them, but like they when they're coming up against a big team, they're so selfless, bro, in a way mm-hmm. where Shea Adams don't even think about scoring first. He's yeah. thinking about pressing the shit out of the team, making sure that they lose the ball. Danny Ings is the same. But the thing is, they've got the quality, because it is the Premier League, they've got the quality that when a mistake is made, we're going to get punished, bro.
Yeah.
We're going to get punished. And this is the thing that Lampard is not getting. He's not thinking about cutting out the mistakes first. He's thinking, like, I want to play my way. I want to do it my way. Like, we're going to press. I'm gonna stick with the way I'm playing. Mount left, press. But it's like, bro, you're not, like, perfect the thing first. Perfect it, bro. It's not Salah and Mane, bro.
It's funny because we talk about, you know, managers having to adapt and adaptability being important. And interesting, one of the best things about Frank Lampard last season, I'd say, is that his willingness to adapt if things weren't really working. This season, it seems like he's gone the complete opposite way, which is frustrating to see. Mm. And I mean, it's like there's a real stubbornness to his decision-making and his behaviours in comparison to last season. Last season, I didn't think he was quite stubborn at all. I think he was maybe sometimes too quick to change things in terms of formation, in terms of patterns. Mm. But this season, I think he's persisting in a way where he's got his players now. So he thinks...
I was just going to say that. Do you think it's because he's got the superstars in that?
I think it's because he thinks, I've got my players now, so I'm going to persist this way. And eventually, because my brain works so amazingly, eventually this is going to work. This is facts,
because he's got the superstars now, yeah? And he's using it as an excuse to shoehorn man in. Like, the thing is, this is the maddest thing. They're going to think, like, right, Chelsea are getting onto Mount heavy, but we're Mount's biggest fans in a way where when he's playing centre mid, we're loving that. We're cool with that. But when you're playing a man left wing for a player who is not some fringe, no, do you get what I'm saying? I'm talking about Pulisic. I'm talking about Hudson, who's been fit the whole season. From game, he's been fit. Mm. He's been working. He's got ability. He's a big, big threat in terms of he's got pace, he's got skill, 1v1, he's a demon. Do you know what I mean? Like, so you've got this player sitting on the bench, but yet you've gone to go and get a player that is not good 1v1. He's not good 1v1. He hasn't got any sort of winger's instinct. Like, the first thing Mount will do is probably cut him to either pass it or if he can try and get a shot off, he will. But how many shots has Mount got off since playing left wing since, like, start of the season? Hardly any, bro.
It's interesting. When we talk about Mount, I feel like people misconstrue the criticism of to play Mount wide rather than playing Mount. I'm not against playing Mount. I've always been in favour of Mount being in midfield. I've always said Mason Mount should play midfield. He should play midfield. Because I feel like where you can get the benefit, every benefit that you think that you'll get out wide, you get it in midfield. Because his ability to break lines, his ability to press well in better areas is a lot better, a lot more efficient than doing it out wide. It doesn't make any sense to me, genuinely. And again, when you lack the attacking thrust of a winger, you're almost playing with 10 men. You're literally almost playing with 10 men because I don't think he'd bring in much. I mean, he'll give you small moments of quality because he's a good player. Mason Mount's a good player. You know, you get decent bits of quality, but it's I just don't understand you playing him wide. It just, you take so much away from him. It's almost like we've repeated ourselves quite a number of times on this. You take so much away from him as a player playing him wide. You take so much out of his game as a player playing him wide. So this whole notion of forcing him in, that we've been saying it for ages. It's not like we hate the guy. We don't hate the guy. But we saw this coming. We saw what this was. You know what I mean? Dan especially said, look, Mount is going to get forced in regardless of whether you see it. And I was like, well, yeah, but it can't be wide. There's no way you'll force him wide. If you're going to force him, fine. Play him in the 10, play Havertz wide, whatever. I did not envision Mount being forced into a 4-2-3-1 out wide. I didn't envision that at all.
I saw it last season, Man United, the first game. I saw it just because from the story of preseason, it was like, okay, cool. From what we've all watched, you play Barkley 10, you know, maybe Mount Webb, because at that point, that's where he was playing. But he just said, no, fuck it. I'm going to do this. And so when you're talking about, like, Lampard trusting in his own brain, to be fair, when you're a manager, you have to do that. I'm happier, like, compared to last season where it was just changing things, changing formation. Oh, let's go 3-4-3. I'm happier that he's doing it my way, that he's doing the Frank Sinatra thing. Because, really and truly, look, Lampard could get sacked. Roman's not a patient man. And he can't kind of second guess himself at this point. He spent too much money, all right? If he believes in Mount and that Mount has to play even though it's on the wing, he has to do that. Now, obviously, as we're critical, we're going to still criticise that. But at the same time, what I don't want him to do is become Lampard of old season in terms of Tinkerman. I'm changing the formation. I'm doing this now. I'm just throwing mud so it sticks. Because, yeah, the 4-2-3-1 is what he's bought players for. He's taken Loftus-Cheek. He sent Loftus-Cheek out on loan. He sent Barkley out on loan. We don't really have that many box-to-box midfielders now. So I don't want to see him just switching.
Don't you think that, this is what I was saying. So remember, Shem, I'll bring you in a second. But remember when I said, when Lampard took, when he sent Ruben off and Barkley off on loan, I said, Lamps, are you sure this makes sense? Because if there is a point where you recognise that there's, because I felt that this 4-2-3-1 is going to cause us problems, because it caused us problems last season. When we switched to a 3-4-3 and 4-3-3, we looked a lot better. Every other game, we've looked better in those formations. It was a 4-2-3-1 that was always giving us the issue. So I'm not surprised at the teething issues. I'm not surprised at all, because I don't like the formation per se. Shemi, do you think that the 4-3-3 is the best way to get all of our players in and comfortable, as well as giving us solidity? Or do you think he should stick with a 4-2-3-1?
Oh, no, I 100% think 4-3-3 is the way forward. I just feel like we'll have more control in the middle. And I just feel like, just generally, for us to be more solid, that is the way forward. Because obviously, when teams start pressing us, as we saw against Southampton, as we saw in other games as well, I know Palumi alludes to this a lot, like when we start getting put under pressure, that it just gets stressed, like literally. And you need that extra man. I was watching the Southampton game back here. I was watching in the second half. I was crying out for Havertz to just drop a little bit, just because, just to have that body there. It's not even necessarily about the third person having to be like a ball winner or this guy who makes mad tackles. It's not even about that. It's just generally, it's just about shape. So when the opposition have the ball and you have that extra man next to your two central midfielders, the spaces are covered, you get me? So it's not even about having this ball winner or whatever. It's literally, this is why people that think Havertz can't play CM, like, it doesn't make sense, because it's literally, all he has to do, not only has he got the work rate, but it's not even that his job is hard. All he has to do is just be a body and just be there. Two steps. I covered the spaces. It's literally that simple.
Bro, this was funny. Simple. Like this morning. This was crazy. Frank Lampard played in a 4-3-3 all his career, pretty much. All his career. And no one could talk to me about Frank Lampard's defensive work. He was never really a defensive guy. Never really. He chipped in with a little bit of work. Havertz is a lot more hardworking in terms of the defensive side of the game than Frank Lampard ever was. So why on earth couldn't Havertz play as a 4-3-3? I saw Dan's tweet earlier on that account. Oh yeah, I think the 4-3-3 is the best way to go. Jorginho at the base with Kante on left set of centre midfield as like a defensive set of eight, and Havertz as an offensive eight, I guess, or as the number eight. People like, no, oh, you want us to be leaking goals. What? I said, wait, what? Hold on. We currently play 4-2-3-1.
In it.
Currently have Havertz as a number 10, who's not in a defensive area or a central area, unless it's in the final third. So you're saying that makes more sense than a 4-3-3. What? It just doesn't.
And the funny thing is, yeah, these same fans here are the same fans that literally watch City obliterate the league here, 100 points, playing De Bruyne and David Silva as 2-8s. It's literally all about structure and coaching. If you can coach your teams to be in the right places when we don't have the ball, if you can tell them how to press when we don't have the ball, it works. It's really that simple.
And this is what's so infuriating. Yeah. In our best games, we played 4-3-3 last season. We had Barkley and Mount as the eights. What are you saying? How? And defensively, we look solid. I remember against Liverpool, we looked solid. Against I think Spurs, I think, yeah, we play Spurs at home. We look solid. We look fantastic. It just doesn't make sense. The whole logic that we can't do it and it's too open is a nonsense because we're not. Our team shape and structure and organisation generally, as well as passing options.
But also, what I'd say is this. There is some coaching that has to come into it too in terms of the 4-3, if you want to play Havertz there, you have to understand that actually, remember the Southampton goal, Havertz was trying things in midfield, so things are going to break down. There has to be cover. So it's not like, listen, even the 4-2-3-1, look, the 4-2-3-1 can work. We've seen Bayern Munich play with 4-2-3-1. We've seen Ajax, which in fact we're kind of similar to, because obviously if you think about Ziyech on the right, and then they had BBB as the 10, and then they had, what I'm saying, so these can work, but the manager has to know, the manager has to know the formation intimately to know, okay, off the ball, what do I do to the structure, as Shemi was saying, to protect? So that all formations can work. My kind of hesitation is, does Lampard know what to do enough off the ball to protect? Because from what I've seen so far, the answer is no.
It's just, it's a coaching thing.
The thing about what Dan's saying as well is so important because, like, obviously I'm not a coach, innit? But I know for a fact, with the ability like players like Reece James have, where they're so comfortable right back, even the right centre-back probably be very comfortable, even as a centre-back, quite comfortable. There's things you can do, there's ways you can set up, there's instructions you can give to those type of players to help people like Havertz in a 4-3-3 when, say, for example, like Dan's saying, when you want to prevent things like that happening when he's coming too deep, giving the ball away. Players like Reece James, they stop things like that from happening because they are a little bit more intelligent on the ball. They have got the ability to you're not necessarily knocking it long, but you've got the ability in terms of your passing ability to put it in a certain area to get the opponent turning and the other way.
And just to clip it down the line, bro. Like, just the capacity to clip it down the line, bro. Like, Reece James has got that capacity. Yeah, and Reece is comfortable under pressure relatively on the ball. So when you've got an Azpilicueta who keeps getting it and launching it, you know what I mean? It does cause a bit of issues, but that 3-3, yes, I'll give Lampard a little bit of leeway simply because I know a lot of those errors were individual errors, and I try not to allow Lampard to fall onto those excuses because he does fall onto it a lot. That's literally his favorite go-to bar. But it was a disappointing draw, really and truly. People are dropping points all over the place, and I feel like the points that we've dropped, not good enough considering that. I just feel like it's just not good enough considering that everyone really is dropping points, but I feel we've dropped them in the most disappointing way. I don't feel like we've had like a, you know, we've been smashed all over the pitch. I feel like we tend to be doing okay, and then it just, you know, we just don't manage the situations in games well. But fortunately,
does anybody want breakfast? Guys, let's go. I'm leaving for McDonald's in 5 seconds.
Why did you start with that?
The Breakfast Stampede Meal. It's only at McDonald's, where there's a meal for every morning.
And nothing says morning like a classic sausage McMuffin with egg. Right now, get this all-time favorite for just $2 on the $1-$3 menu. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Fortunately, we've got a Sir Mendy back. And that leads us quite nicely onto the Sevilla game, which was, again, a bit of a far cry from what we saw against Southampton. A lot more solid. Jay, how did you find the game? Because for me, I thought it was awful. But we looked a lot more assured. Thiago Silva came back into the fold. Mendy came back into the fold too. It's incredible how those two players really, and Reece James as well. It's incredible how those three players really came back and suddenly we looked a lot more solid and resolute. But yeah, what were your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, contrast from, I feel like, not a complete contrast, but like a lot of it was quite different to the Southampton game where when it got to that back line, I wasn't as nervous as I was before. I think I was even more confident when I see Mendy slap the ball out and then, like, pretty much like flipping, claw the ball out from the net, innit? And I was just thinking, geez, like, we've actually got like a serious key. Like, he's not just no any guy as well. He looks like he's a decent keeper, do you know what I mean? So long may it continue, but Chilwell again, I think definitely you have to give props to Chilwell. Like, he's been quality since coming in. I didn't even think he was going to be as good as he's been these first few games. But he's definitely added something to the team.
He's an interesting one, Chilwell. I feel like a lot, well, I wouldn't say a lot of us, I feel some of us, and myself included, didn't really, I wouldn't say give him a chance, because I've always, when he came in, I said, okay, you know what? He's got his guy, Lampard's got his guy. We'll give him a chance to show what he can do. Before he came, I definitely wasn't his biggest fan. I wasn't rating him at all. But one thing that I can definitely say is that he's definitely surprised me, not only in his defensive capabilities, but his comfortableness, that he's so comfortable on the ball. And I think that's really, really important. I feel like we've lacked that so much from left back. We're so used to our left backs being quite sloppy. But one thing that Chilwell gives you is an assuredness. And he's very assured in his play, very comfortable and very resolute. And that's one thing that it is refreshing to see for us. You know what I mean? And it may not be that he's like a super, like supreme left back, but he's so like a marked improvement on what we had before. And he gives a degree of just technical security and solidity defensively. And I thought one thing that is a great thing about him in the air, he's very, very good. Very good. I think that most games I see him like beating his wide man in the air all the time. You know what I mean? So he gives us a degree of defensive security as well. So, sorry, Dan, go on.
Yeah, so like you said, you got someone that aerially, defensively could help you. But you've also got someone, like you said, I didn't know he was that good on the ball. Technically, his feet are really good. His feet, I see him switching in between in tight areas. But apart from that, Zuma scored 2 goals this season and he should have had a couple more. The corners that Chilwell takes in terms of, and then don't get aerially, is amazing too. So you talk about someone that's fit. You talk about someone that creates chances. You're talking about someone that covers for Zuma. Was it against the Southampton game when Zuma lost it? So, my praise for Chilwell and that signing. Now, I was never necessarily against the signing. What I didn't want is that Lampard just to buy him because he's English. I don't watch Leicester enough. In fact, the few times I watched Leicester, he played good. But I was just saying, listen, of all of the left-backs we've got, I just hope that they pick the right one and it's not necessarily this is an English one. From what I've seen from Chilwell so far, there's no complaints at all. He's been one of our best players. He adds so much to our game.
I do think that's a bit of a, I would say it's a little bit rudimentary, because I don't think it is just an English thing. I don't think it would have been just an English thing. To be fair to Chilwell, he has always been coveted as one of the best left backs, and I guess potentially one of the best left backs in the Premier League. But he's always been looked upon in that regard. So I wouldn't ever think the English thing.
No, I didn't say.
But it's just your hope. You hoped it wasn't.
I
had an inkling of that as well. So
okay, fair.
My thing is, I get that you might want to buy the best of English, but I'm just saying it's a global market. So if there's a great left back, let's not even play. Let's try and get the best we can get. But I think that from what we've seen so far, we're all happy.
Yeah, I think he cost what, £45 million. And again, people haven't mentioned the price tag. I feel like it's very, everyone's generally quite comfortable paying crazy prices for people as long as they perform. You don't actually ever mention people's prices if they perform well. You know what I mean? So I think, exactly. So I feel like no one's going to mention Timo Werner's price tag, in my opinion, because I think that he's got the capacity to score a bundle of goals. No one's really going to mention Chilwell's price anymore, because I feel like if he continues in and continues his form, I don't think people will mention the price. Generally, it'll be forgotten. I just think it's one of those things. And that's why Kepa, we're almost reminded of his price, because the level of quality that we've got and paid for in relative to how he performs, it's incredible. It's incredible. So, yeah, Chilwell has been an absolute standout for me personally. Sorry, Jay, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, and to couple that, like, obviously, I think Reece James has come back and he looks like he's focused a lot on his defensive side this season. And I think, we saw him against, we saw him for England. I know that match is gone. We're not going to talk about that match, but he had a crazy performance for England in that right wing back role, especially it being the right wing back role where we as Chelsea fans know he's struggled a lot in that position. And for him to have a stormer like that was good to see. But then that is kind of why I wanted him to play the Southampton game, because I wanted him to come straight off that and continue that kind of form.
You said it.
Confidence. Do you know what I mean? Like, keep improving, keep improving, keep working on your defending. Because I feel like with James, I think with Wigan, the best thing for him was that he was playing week in, week out. They looked at him like a superstar. They looked at him like a leader. Do you know what I mean? And I think if Chelsea do the same thing with James, I feel like we're just going to see a monster, a right back. Do you know what I mean? I feel like we've got a proper gem in Reece James at right back. And I think we all know that, obviously. But with players like Lamptey, and rightfully so, he's been getting mad praise. With players like Lamptey playing the way they are, you know, Reece James is going to have to start showing why we put so much faith into him. And I'm just happy to see him working on the weaknesses of his game a little bit and coming into the team and performing.
Yeah, well. I feel that's I guess we could go back to the Sevilla game, because Reece James was superb for me. Defensively, he was incredible. Not because he did anything like super outstanding, but he locked down that side. I felt like he locked down that side. And Sevilla, very technical side, very intricate. But he looks so comfortable. And that's one thing that we've always been worried about with Reece James, his focus. And I guess the cute play around him, it can get him into trouble quite a lot. But he dealt with that side. That side of the game, I was super impressed with, because he dealt with the cute things. Like, you know, just stepping in at the right time. And just looking at the runners, tracking the movement. That was a marked improvement on Reece James and what I saw last season. Reece James, obviously, going forward is fantastic. We know he's got a wand of a right foot. We know that. We've seen his quality. But the defensive aspect, I feel like last season especially, he can be quite, like, he sleeps in certain instances. And, you know, he's not always switched on. But this season, in particularly against Sevilla, he was pretty much alert to every bit of danger that came his way, which is a marked improvement of what I've seen before. Dan, what do you think of Reece's performance? And I guess, do you think that now this really should solidify his spot as our starting right back?
So I agree with you in terms of, for me, this was a right back performance. A lot of the times when we talk about Reece James, it's him hanging up the field, doing crosses. This was a right back's performance. I don't know whether it's because Acuna was given him, like he was told to look after Acuna, but he was a beast in terms of using his body physically. He was on everything, even just making sure as a fullback the crosses don't come in. Because any cross, especially with us, I know like we're better now with Zuma aerially, but like the bread and butter, he took care of everything. Even in terms of creating chances, we didn't have that many chances. But there was one time he done a long ball over to Werner. Werner almost got in. It didn't quite work out. But also there was a time when he kind of done his trademark and got a cross in, and Werner the best of it too. So like, again, I think both of our backs had great performances. Jay, you quickly mentioned something about how you kind of wanted him to always play, but then if we kind of juxtaposition Reece James with Mount, where it feels like Mount plays regardless, whereas with RJ there's competition. It's like he's not just going to play regardless, therefore he has to step up. He can't be a liability defensively, because for me, I was saying, listen, if we're going to have Ziyech there, or if we're going to have Havertz in right central midfield or around that area, then like we need a solid defensive right back. Now Reece James has had to show, I have to be a solid defensive right back, because otherwise I'm out of the team. So I like the fact that he's got competition. I like the fact that Aspie can come in, and that's kind of just what I wanted to mention.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that is a very good point, because again, I feel like last season, that you actually might be on like hitting the money there, because last season Reece James, pretty much when he was fit, he played. You know what I mean? And I think towards the latter part of the season, it was pretty much a fair fight between Aspie and Reece James, and Aspie started to win it really in terms of getting the starts at right back and sometimes at left back, but generally he was getting his game. So I feel like, I guess Lampard has probably seen that and thought, you know what? Aspie's done. He's done relatively decent. He's been solid. I can't lie. Aspie against Crystal Palace was very, very solid. So I guess I understood why Reece James was playing. Well, no, why Aspie played against Southampton, but at the same time, Reece James had an absolute storm against Sevilla. But I do want to talk about our lack of offensive prowess that game. I know it could be said that it was a good point. I'm not entirely convinced, because at home in the Champions League, you really should be trying to win those games. But after the debacle of the Southampton match, maybe Lampard wanted to play with the handbrake on, but I think it did stifle our offensive side. Do you feel like right now we're kind of halfway housing things and we're stuck in between two ways? Because I feel like we have to be either super defensive to be solid or super offensive to actually manage to get goals, but then we're going to leak. Shemi, what are your thoughts? Because people do want to say that, oh, that was a great, solid, you know, great European performance. But how did you take it?
It's difficult. I took it. I was happy with the clean sheet and the way we defended, because quite frankly, some of the defending this season hasn't been good enough. But at the same time, I don't feel like with the talent that we have on the pitch, I don't feel like we should be stifled this much just to defend well. Like, I don't like that. Do you get what I'm trying to say? I feel like it's very simple to have a balance. I know last pod I was talking about when I was asked about Mount and him not being used incorrectly, and I said no. And then, literally, Lampard just came and embarrassed me in the next two games. But I feel like, literally, yeah. So I could hold my hands up on that one and say, yeah, completely wrong. But yeah, literally, as I was watching the Seville game, and it's like, something just wasn't right. There was no rotation at all. Like, in the Southampton game, you saw there was fluidity, there was movement. Sometimes Havertz would move out on the right, sometimes Pulisic through the centre. This game, there was no rotation. Literally, Pulisic came over to the left-hand side for, 5 minutes, and he went straight back over to the right. And that's how it stayed for the rest of the game. It was really, really bad. And yeah, not to pick out Mount, but him being out there, it was literally, he wasn't able to offer us anything at all. But yeah, I don't think it's just him. I feel like everyone generally had an off night. If you're not in the back four, I don't feel like you really had a good game. I feel like everyone ahead of the defence was pretty average, as Pell said in the group chat. I don't feel like anyone would stand out, to be honest. So it could be a mixture of the two, of everyone just having an off night, and also, you know, the way we were set up, because, yeah, man, it was a contrast from what we saw in the first 35 minutes at Southampton.
I do think that Jorginho had a relatively decent game again. Me personally, I thought he was all right. I didn't think he was a bad performer. I thought he was quite decent. Again, Thiago Silva, he's just absolutely superb. I think he gives so much, bro. He gives so much composure to our team. I can't. Man is doing this without speaking English, bro. I can't.
Apparently he's learning
Bro, I can't. He has a transformative nature. I think players that are of high elite status have transformative effects on team. I think Thiago Silva is still so good because he has that transformative effect on our side. He brings a level of assurance, calmness, and just knowing when to step out. We ain't seen that since John Terry. We ain't seen that since John Terry. The ability to just step out and know when to the ability to just read the play. Football is a universal language. But that's why he can speak it so well. That's why he could bring others in so well. That's why he brings so much calmness so well. Because he reads the game perfectly, bro. It's incredible. Even though Zuma, for me, had very sloppy moments that game. Very sloppy. He makes Zuma 10 times better. He makes Zuma 10 times better because Zuma isn't having to worry about what other people are doing. He has to focus on himself. And I think a lot of the time, I guess yesterday, I felt like Zuma, part of the reason why he performed so badly is, for me anyway, I think he was still in the mindset of what happened on Saturday. I think that kind of impacted him. I think the mistake...
I was going to say, potentially, they watched that Southampton game and thought, we're not going to get anything out of Thiago Silva.
Yeah, they're on him. Sure. They were on him. They were pressuring him. They were pressuring him a lot. So on the ball, he was quite porous. So he was making sloppy mistakes with the ball. But yeah, go on, Shemi.
Just quickly, on the Zuma thing as well, yeah. I remember Meadie making one point on one of the pods a while ago about how Thiago made Kimpembe a lot more assured. He made Marquinhos a lot more assured. You know what I'm trying to say? And I feel like that is something that can definitely happen with Zuma. And essentially with the Southampton game, the fact that Christensen was thrown in there, because obviously most of us thought Thiago would start until we got the news that he'd flown to Peru, and yeah, just a madness. So the fact that I don't think it's going to help Zuma if Thiago's in and out, I feel like Thiago has to play as much as possible for Zuma to look all right. Because if Thiago's in and out, and which might well be a possibility because of his age, you know, injuries or whatever, and then Zuma has to deal with one day it's Thiago, one time it's Christensen, then it could actually be like we could see Zuma fluctuate in terms of form. So I feel like the more that Thiago is there next to him, the more consistency we might see in Zuma. Therefore, that might lead to the ironing out of mistakes, hopefully.
I was just going to say quickly, we don't have Thiago Silva for that long. So whilst he's here, we need to get as much knowledge transfer about that over to Zuma. You know what I mean?
Listen, I was about to say, and especially given the fact that Christensen's very shaky in the likes himself, it does breed a little bit of concern throughout our defence. So yeah. I feel like with whilst Tomori isn't pristine and perfect, I think Tomori and Zuma have played enough times together to make me realise that, yeah, they're a better pairing than Zuma and Christensen. So whenever Thiago Silva isn't there, I really think it should be a Tomori situation. But again, Tomori is looking like he's fifth choice, you know, because I'd anticipate Aspilicueta being played ahead of him at right back, at right centre back. So it's a bit of a mess there. But yeah, Thiago Silva, imperious, you know what I mean? I feel like
the most impressive thing
overboard.
About,
sorry,
Mies. I was going to say the most impressive thing about Thiago Silva in that Sevilla game was that I think I'd be surprised if we play a team that moves the ball as well as Sevilla do this season again. Like, you know, you could talk about Man City, but even Man City, I don't think they're moving the ball the same way they were maybe last season or the season before that. I feel like Sevilla, the way they were moving the ball, they were moving it very quickly. They were pressing. Yeah,
they're popping us still.
Thiago Silva dealt with a lot that game. Do you get what I'm saying? In terms of if you're worrying about him going up against, I don't know, a Liverpool or a City, you know, the top teams in the league, for me, that kind of put me, like, it made me very confident about how he's going to deal with a lot of the teams in the Premiership, because I don't think they'll move the ball as well as Sevilla do. Do you see what I'm saying?
I agree. I feel like for me, my biggest concern with Thiago Silva is his physicality and how he can handle the PMP of the Prem. But when you can read the game so well, my comfort is raised. I'm very, very much comfortable now because I know that he may not need to resort, you know, and rely upon his PMP to really be comfortable. I think his ability to read the game and settle everyone else around him brings me a degree of assurance. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he can, I guess, continue throughout the season, man. Because again, like you said, that knowledge transfer is going to be vital. But it seems like he's working wonders already, which is fantastic. I want to talk about Kai Havertz in a Sevilla game. I feel like a lot of people saying, oh yeah, he didn't really do much, etc. I think it's quite weird. I think people are trying to rush to criticise him, which is a bit of a funny one. But I feel like he's such a superb player. And I feel like he does everything so well generally. But I just feel like, especially with the way that we set up and the way that we try to play against Sevilla, he was never going to have that much of an influence. So I remember there was only one real chance of note that I remember, bar the Zuma header, was the Timo Werner before the end of the first half. Well, he had that half chance to really just smash it on the volley in the middle of the box, but he didn't take it. But aside from that,
2020 has presented its share of challenges, and some of us are taking a hard look at our future. Can you imagine owning your own business? As an Amerispec franchise owner, you can have more security and control over your future and be there for your community with an essential service year-round. You could join the most recognized brand in home inspection services, Amerispec, and provide peace of mind to home buyers. With low startup costs and excellent operational support, you can be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Learn more at join.amerispec.com/podcast.
I didn't really see much of Werner. I didn't really see much of Pulisic. Didn't see much of Mount. I didn't really see anything of Mount. Havertz was in and out of the game generally. That's because the nature of the way we tried to play and approach the game. And it seemed like after the game, Frank Lampard seemed quite happy with the draw, which is an odd one. And you know, that's Frank Lampard's first 0-0. I think after about 60 games, which is a bit crazy. Do you think that this is probably going to be an approach that we take against the bigger sides, or do you think that maybe this was just a one-off thing for the Champions League and he didn't want to really take any risks? Dan?
Yeah, so I think last season we saw Lampard changing the actual formation to go more defensive. I think this season we're going to see changes in the structures. As Shemi said earlier, you didn't really see the players rotating like you did against Southampton. That's because they had man-marking instructions. You say that Pulisic didn't see much of him, but don't forget, he was playing on the right. I think when he went to the left...
He looked a lot better.
Yeah,
he immediately started to take it on. The pitch seemed wider. Like, it seemed like more creations. But like Shemi said, he went back to the right. So I think it was definitely Lampard's thinking to last season where the Valencia loss in the first game, that pass on the back foot.
A lot of pressure, yeah.
Right, so I think that he's just thinking, okay, for this, especially this European match, I even agree with him. It's a European match. The first thing you want to do is make sure you don't lose. I know that's kind of negative, but at the same time, look, they almost scored a worldie. I don't know if you guys remember. I can't remember who.
Yeah.
It was the volley from the right back.
Exactly, and we lost that. We lost that Valencia game, I think, to one good goal. I don't think they had many chances. We lost it to one good goal. So,
in fact, against Valencia, they had no chances apart from that free kick.
A lot of people would like to say, "Oh, this shows an improvement from last season," but actually, like, it's not that dissimilar from the Valencia match. We're lucky that to come away, a chance didn't go for them. Maybe a chance didn't go for us. But like Meads was saying, we didn't really create that many chances. I think we need to figure out how to create, like I said in the Southampton game, Werner had to create his own chance, or there was a long ball. I don't necessarily think there's ways to get Werner chances at this point. So, yeah, it was a poor attacking performance in general, but I think that is just the structure, the instructions that, listen, let's concentrate on the clean sheet first and foremost.
Just on that point about, creating free goal means, about creating chances for Werner, this is why I feel like even more Havertz coming deeper would benefit us, because Havertz passing has been superb. Even last against Sevilla and Southampton, bruv, the way his passing is just so on point, so pinpoint. Yeah. And I feel like if he sometimes can drop in and just see like the picture a little bit more, as opposed to just being close to Werner and being a goal threat, he's another person that can drop that ball over to Havertz. Rather it just being Jorginho, because no, Kante is not going to do it from deep. He might do it if he gets close to the final third, potentially, but we can't rely on that. Jorginho's going from deep, we know, when he sees the opportunity, but rely on him. So if Havertz can drop in and use his passing, because his passing, from what I've seen so far, is brilliant, and he has the vision to do it, then that could be a creative outlet as well for Werner.
Completely agree. And this is why, again, this is why I championed the 4-3-3, because it allows him to... I think people don't understand how dynamic this kid is. Havertz is super dynamic.
Nah, for real.
His ability to run with the ball, carry the ball, pass, is literally exceptional. So I think you almost waste him a bit playing him in the 10. I think you take away so much of what's good from him. And that's not to say that he's not a superb 10. He's amazing there. But I think as an 8, he could do so much more. And it opens up a whole different door. You know, and it's a different realm of what he's capable of. You know what I mean?
I think the league as well. I think, you know, in terms of the way the league changes, I know Dan spoke about Bundesliga earlier and saying how that's the league you go to for, like, when you want to see an open game, loads of goals. For Havertz being a 10 in Bundesliga makes sense, because the amount of times they get the ball in transition and they're on the attack, and you've seen how Havertz does them kind of long busting runs, long strides. He gets up the pitch very quickly.
Bundesliga,
that will often result in a goal or an assist from him. Do you know what I mean? In terms of somebody else getting on the end of it. But here, it might be a thing where teams, you might not have that much green. Do you get what I'm saying? To run into. So it might be a thing where him dropping deeper sometimes might benefit him in terms of seeing the picture. Because, like, we might need somebody to drop deep and be a little bit more creative. Because the other thing is, Jorginho, they know Jorginho is the guy. He's been here for like 2 seasons now. So Havertz is not the guy right now to them to chase after in terms of stopping him from playing the passes and that. Mm. They know he's dangerous, obviously, but they know what Jorginho is about more so. That's why he's been a target for teams for, like, not a target in the sense where he's a weakness, but a target in the sense where... If you stop him, you stop Chelsea playing. Whereas if they're focusing on Jorginho, but then you've got Havertz floating about trying to make things happen, then it might be a thing where it could work out. But we'll have to wait and see, because I do feel like in the 10, he can be just as dangerous.
This is what I said about Havertz. It's another thing in terms of Lampard and options. Havertz is can be exceptional number 10. As we saw in the Bundesliga, still could be exceptional number 9. Also, it depends on what Havertz you want. And I think it's just down to Lampard to say, okay, where can I use him best? Do we need him for the creativity? Do we need him for the goals? But I think that kind of work needs to happen, and then that needs to be put in place. In terms of Havertz, for me, I think we should get someone else to bring it up. I know he can do that, but I just feel like I want him in the free, so I don't mind him in the free. But I don't necessarily think that we should make him the playmaker, because I think that if he's the one that always has to get on the ball, I don't think that will work. I think we need someone else to draw the attention so that Havertz can be the free man that to make the final pass. I think when everything's being played through him, I don't think that's a good idea at all. We'll see how it is. But I think...
Well, obviously, with the return of Hakim Ziyech, you know, he's played the last two games and sub appearances. Is there not a question where Hakim Ziyech is generally a playmaker? He's the type of player that always wants to try and make things happen. And I don't think we could, you know, read too much into the reports about Hakim Ziyech, Pulisic and Hudson-Odoi being the right-hand side options. And, you know, those are the three that are battling out, and Mason Mount starts on the left all the time. Whatever.
I'll stop watching.
We can't read too much into that. That being said, whilst you have a 4-3-3 and you've got Hakim Ziyech on the right and Kai Havertz on the right-hand side of a midfield three, again, responsibilities, options, rotation, capacity to rotate in that area of the field where they're effective, and again, face the play where the pitch is open to both of them on their left foot. For me, it just seems like a better option more than anything else. Not to mention that it gives you a bit more solidity in the midfield creatively, and your ability to progress play already opens up. How have you found Hakim Ziyech's, I guess, two latest appearances, I guess two debut appearances in the Champions League for us in the Premier League? How have you found him? Do you feel, because obviously he's still finding his feet, but what do you think he can actually bring to us? I'll go with Shemi.
I think it will alleviate the Havertz pressure, for one. That's what I alluded to last podcast. I think last podcast when I said that, I feel like we're too central around him. So I feel like his creativity. So from what I've seen of Hakim Ziyech, yeah, like if he's given time on the ball, he's looking up and he's gonna whack across him. Like whether he's at the byline or whether he's like approaching the ball or whatever, like wherever he is, he's gonna swing across him. You know what I'm trying to say? And that extra dynamic of his passing is gonna bring chance creation and creativity. So with him coming in, it's a good thing, because I feel like then there's another creative outlet, and not everything's just going to go through the middle of the pitch. Again, rotation as well, because Ziyech is someone that's very fluid. He can come in and, you know, he can pop things in or go back out wide or whatever. So, yeah, I think it can only be a positive, because from what we've seen of him, you know, he's a brilliant player. And I think more chances, and that can only be better. It can only mean one goal, hopefully.
Dan, what are your thoughts on Ziyech, and do you think he could pretty much assist, you know, king of assists. do you think he can assist in our creative problems? Because I do feel like right now we're struggling quite a bit to really carve out chances and carve teams apart. We do it in spells, but on a consistent basis, do you feel like Hakim Ziyech can really provide that creative thrust that we're quite clearly lacking?
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, that's Ziyech all over. But Ziyech, what he does is, I remember I was at the Southampton game. The first thing he done was like, he done a through ball and no one was expecting it. And Ziyech was like, I'm here. This is what I've come to bring in it. Like, why did you chase that? And everyone was like, rah. Like,
yeah. yeah.
So it's not just Ziyech crossing. He'll come in the middle, he'll do through balls. And kind of what I was trying to say earlier in terms of it can't all go through Havertz, because then there's no creativity. There needs to be kind of spontaneity. It's almost like we were a bit predictable with Hazard, but he had the dribbling skill to get through it. But everybody knew everything was coming through Hazard. Why not with Havertz anymore? And I think the good thing about having Ziyech and Havertz together, and I think Ziyech will be the main playmaker because he's the one that's going to fall. Like with Havertz, he might do a quick pass, but no, Ziyech is going to like, how do I get this striker through on goal? That's the first thing that he's going to execute. Right. And so, yeah, I don't think we've seen a good performance. Obviously, they're both cameos. I know that he definitely has to get up to speed in terms of physicality. But yeah, I do want Ziyech and Havertz to play regularly together, because it's going to be difficult to find out that relationship. Who should kind of go back? Who should go forward? When do I release you? And that needs to build. That relationship needs to build up. So I don't necessarily want to see chopping and changing. I want to see, as long as they're playing,
as long as they play together. That's what I mean. As long as they play together and build relationships, I think they're going to be a very dangerous duo together. Not to mention Timo Werner, because Timo Werner and Havertz seem to already have built some form of decent connection between themselves, because they're good players. Generally, good players connect naturally. So I really do hope that it is a situation where Ziyech is playing on the right-hand side regularly, and just remain for the left-hand side to be decided. But yeah, go on, Shemi.
Just quickly, to echo Dan's point about Ziyech being creator. I agree with Dan. I feel like Ziyech would be the main creator as well. And I feel like Lampard probably sees Hazard as a secondary goal scorer. That's probably why he's resisted him so much in the 10. Do you get me? So, and also, you know, the Liverpool game, second game of the season, he played Havertz false nine. Yeah. So he's obviously watched Havertz in Germany play false nine. Well, I don't know, anyone who watched Bayer Leverkusen post-lockdown, who watched him play false nine, and he quite a few goals. I feel like a lot of that's in Lampard's head. So he probably sees Havertz as a secondary goal scorer. That's probably why he's persistent with him down in the middle. I'm not bringing him back. And probably wants Ziyech to be the creator, but...
It's true. Yeah, however, Jemmy, he's Frank Lampard.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not saying...
I know, but I just... You know what I'm saying? So, like, there's a little bit of... You don't have to. Okay.
You don't have to. I agree.
Here's what I'm saying, because you can almost... So, here's this. 4-2-3-1. When you play four attackers, what does that mean? It means that the other team has to have more bodies back, because you've got four attackers there, which means there's less space for these attackers to go. So, like, there's a little bit of, don't be so deliberate. Yeah. Bring Havertz a bit back so he can move into space rather than forcing him.
There needs to be a little bit of give and take. And I feel like Frank is being a bit too much and giving a bit too much. And when you're playing with four, especially when you're the aggressor, generally most teams are going to sit back. There's going to be less space to operate. There's going to be less room for your stars to really show what they can do. Now, I think not only are you forcing, a player in terms of out wide, in terms of Mason Mount out there, who's not really going to offer much, but then you're also forcing another attacker. So when things break down, which they invariably do because nothing's ever perfect, teams are straight onto you.
Yeah.
Literally straight onto you in transition. And you know, in this Premier League, this is the PMP Prem. Like, when it comes to transition, it's all over. And again, if you add pressure into our midfield, which is not very solid at all, we can't really handle that. So all roads lead to a midfield three looking a bit. It just seems to address so many of our issues.
Yeah.
Not just solidity, but in creativity as well. But yeah, go on, Shemi.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think one example came to mind. I think one team that managed to make the front four work really well was Mancini's Man City, when they had Aguero, Silva, Yaya, Nazri, right? And or give and take Dzeko.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like, especially on the Havertz conversation with him playing 10, like, if you watch that team, David Silva, he wasn't always up Aguero's bum, you get me? Like, he'd come back and he'd pop it with Yaya, he might come to the left and link up with Nazri, do you get me? Like, that in itself is creating space. So as you said, Dan, like, coming back and then just to go forward, like, it makes a lot of sense.
You know Ziyech, where Ziyech will be key is that it's going to sound mad, but I don't think he receives instructions well. Meaning that hopefully it don't mean that he's not in the team. But for me, I like a player that sometimes just does his own thing a little bit. Like, he believes in his source, he knows what he's doing. If he sees certain things happening on the pitch, he's intelligent enough to say, you know what, these men are crowding my space a little bit. Let me go here and do my thing here. And I feel like Ziyech is that guy that's going to do that. I feel like he's going to be like, listen, I've got you, lot.
That's what you need sometimes, bro.
Funny enough, a lot of his ex-coaches have said that. You just leave Ziyech to do his thing because he's so intelligent. He knows what he needs to do. Why would you try and bombard him with instructions? I'm really hoping that Frank doesn't try and do that. I really hope. Mm. I don't want to be, oh, yeah, press. No, shut up. Let the man do what he needs to do. Legit, let the man do what he needs to do because he works hard anyway. We don't need to be saying, oh, yeah, press 100 miles an hour. You've already got Mason Mount doing that on the left-hand side if that's what you want. But let's not do that with Hakim Ziyech. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's going to be interesting. We've got a big game against Manchester United this Saturday. And, you know, Manchester United just come off the back of a big win against Paris Saint-Germain. And we've come off, I guess, a little bit of a whimper against Sevilla. How are you guys going to line up? And how do you think you're going to line up? There's differences here. Because you know that certain people are going to start regardless. Now, how would you, so there's going to be two questions here. How would you set up in this game? Would this be a game that you give Hakim Ziyech his debut, Premier League debut, full debut? Or, again, would you try and tweak it? Because I'm quite comfortable with Timo Werner staying up front. But we'll start with Jay. How do you start? And how do you propose we approach the game? Do you think we'll approach it like Sevilla? Or do you think we'll be a bit more open and try and be the team, the aggressor, to try and get the win? What are your thoughts?
I'll answer the second question first. Like, I think Lampard, funny enough, will try and be the aggressor. And I just think that right now, the reason why I think that is because right now I do think he's a little bit on his high horse at the moment because he's got all his signings in. Mm-hmm. I feel like he thinks he's going to be able to take, you know, he's going to be able to take United, not to the cleaners, but I think he feels like there's some joy there for Werner, for Havertz, and maybe even for Pulisic or, you know, Ochoa anyway, because you never know. But if them guys start, I do feel like there is a possibility that we can hurt United with our attackers this season. With Ziyech starting on the right, so I'd go for the same team basically as what played against Sevilla. So I think it's the back line that we all want, mm-hmm. with James at right back, Mendy in goal, obviously Choa left back, Thiago Silva and Zuma centre back. Centre mid, I'd carry on with Kante and Jorginho, mainly because I don't really feel like they have played bad. Do you know what I'm saying? They've just been victims of maybe wrong instructions at the moment. I feel like they're just getting a few too many, like they're being asked to do a lot.
It's a lot.
And, you know, what can you do? We're limited with midfielders. Kovacic hasn't really had a flow to the start of the season. Them two have. So I just go with consistency and start those two. And then, yeah, Ziyech on the right, Havertz 10, and I'd just go all out and play. To be honest, right now, for me, fitness-wise, I'd play Cho in it. But the likelihood of that happening right now is probably quite low. So I'd say just go for Pulisic and let him do his thing on the left. And let's just see if he can kick on from last season and doing his thing there. And then Werner up top. Because I feel like Ziyech will... I think those defenders and Ziyech's vision and that, I feel like, yeah, CS can make something happen, but it remains to be seen, innit? Hopefully we get the win.
Yeah, it's interesting, considering that what Spurs did to Manchester United away from home. It's going to be interesting to see the approach. Dan, how would you approach the game, and how do you think Frank's going to approach the game? Do you think he's going to be a little bit more reserved, or do you think he's going to try and go for it and get the win?
Man, I hope he's not reserved. I would say he'd be a bit more aggressive, just because it's more in fitting with his character. I think Champions League, he was scared for the last season. That's why I was reserved. But, and I know Liverpool, again, he was a bit scared. But like, I just need him to be a bit braver. So I'm hoping he's brave for the United game. What I'd do is, I wouldn't start Ziyech. I know after the game, Lampard said, Ziyech needs minutes on the pitch. I think Ziyech said himself. He said that the reason why he came on was for match fitness. So I don't anticipate him starting. I think Pulisic has played well in both games. The Southampton game, and obviously none of the attackers covered themselves in glory, but I think out of all the attackers, he kind of makes things happen. There's something I noticed in both the Southampton game and that game in terms of when he receives the ball on the run, so that for that third goal that he scored against that he kind of created against Southampton, and there was a chance he created for Werner, when he's receiving the ball on the run, like, it's amazing. So I'd start Pulisic on the left. I'd start Werner up top. I would go with... I'd go 4-3-3. So Pulisic, Werner, maybe Havertz on the right. I don't know, maybe. And then I'd try a three of Kovacic, Kante, Jorginho, and then the back four we all like and the goalkeeper we all like.
Oh, fair enough, Shemi. How would you set up? How would you approach the game? And yeah, basically, same question I asked the boys before. Do you think Frank is going to try and be a bit more reserved, like the Sevilla game, or do you think he's going to try and take it to them and be a little bit more aggressive?
I think he's going to be on the aggressive in this game, simply because I feel like he'll look back at the way we beat United in a semi-final. We pressed them to death. Like, we pressed them completely off the pitch. And we were very much on the aggressive in that game. I feel like that would be a bit of his mind. Same way that Dwayne Jose spanked them 6-1. Again, high press. They couldn't deal with that press. So being on the aggressive is absolutely the way forward. And I feel like he'll adopt that approach. Yeah, similar to the boys, I feel like the same back line of Sevilla. Now, differing from Dan and Jay, I'm really tempted to throw Kovacic in the double pivot. Because I don't feel like he's going to go for a free. So I'm tempted to throw Kovacic in the double pivot because I feel like the problems that we have with game management and control when we have to suffer, I feel like he can contribute to solving those problems simply because he is very good at alleviating pressure. You know, when he dribbles out under pressure, remember the semi-final? He was absolutely outstanding. Him and Reece James, he was tough up between them two for a man of the match. He was absolutely outstanding. And just the way he alleviates pressure, I feel like is key for game management and for control. So him dribbling out with the ball, winning tackles, all that sort of type thing. So I'm really tempted to throw him in there. Where, for Jorginho Kante, I'm not sure which one, I would be tempted to play him.
So with that, and just quickly, that. So would that be a 4-2-3-1?
It would, yeah. I would play a three of Havertz, Jorginho, and then probably Kovacic.
Yeah.
Kante, give or take. But I'm tempted to put in Kovacic because I just feel like he looks after the ball a bit better. And in terms of Jay, when Jay said about Cho on the left, I completely disagree with that. I don't feel like this is the game for Cho because Cho is a 1v1 winger and I don't really see him getting much play out of Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I can see him getting quite frustrated. Whereas Pulisic is someone that like Dan said, he's quite intelligent. If he sees this is not a 1v1 thing, he's going to come inside. He's going to kind of like link up with Werner, be a bit close to Werner, try to be a bit more of a goal threat. Whereas I see Cho as someone that's going to stay out wide rather than try and support Werner. And he's just not going to get any joy out of Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I can't see that happening.
True.
And that's not damning on Cho, because Cho is a fantastic 1v1 player.
Considering a certain killer Mbappe.
You know what I'm saying? Mbappe struggled as well. Yeah, so I would go Pulisic on the left. Yeah, Pulisic on the left. I'd start Ziyech personally. I think it's time to throw him in there. He's had international duty. He's had two games off the bench. And then Werner up front.
I've had enough of it.
I feel like
I've had enough.
You know what? He's had enough of it. Jeremy's had enough for it. He's like, you know what? I can't see no more.
Yeah, I can't, bro.
Fuck your excuses.
Just throw in my boy. Like,
bro.
You know what? I hear you, though. In regards to the Hudson thing, I definitely hear you. Because on Aaron Wan-Bissaka, as much as he's had his criticisms this season and last season as well, he's an excellent 1v1 defender. Excellent. And whilst Cho's not really featured much in the last couple of games, I feel like you really need to be on your rhythm, really and truly, especially on a 1v1 type of situation. You need to be in your flow to really try and test someone that's as good as Aaron Wan-Bissaka 1v1. And as we found the other day, he locked up Kylian Mbappe to the point where Mbappe was asking his fellow teammates to switch positions.
This episode is sponsored by Schwans.com. What are you having for dinner tonight? Good question. Schwann's Home Delivery has a solution for you. Stock up your freezer with high-quality frozen foods like premium meats and sides, delicious ready-made meals, ice cream, and more. No subscriptions, no memberships, just a friendly yellow truck that's been delivering food for almost 70 years.
Listeners of this show get a special deal. Get 20% off your first order with code YUM20. Check out schwans.com/yum for details.
We don't want that kind of heat for man like Cho.
Yeah,
but I definitely agree. I definitely agree in terms of Pulisic playing on the left. I think that would be a lot more sensible. I'd be very, very stunned, shocked, mortified if I see Mason Mount come up against Wan-Bissaka. I'd be stunned. Because then we start to wonder. Are you actually trying to win these games?
Sabotage yourself.
Yeah, are you trying to win these games? Because
we have to start a dialogue.
We will have no. It will become a dialogue. Right now, we're allowing Lampard to do what he needs to do. And pretty much without minimal criticism, we're just saying, okay, let him play his team, let him play what he wants to do. But that would definitely be a point where dialogues need to happen. You know, Pulisic is back fit. He started the last game. In fact, he started the last two games. If he suddenly doesn't start, we'll let that one lie.
We'll
let that one lie for now.
Dan tried to save Lampard by saying, Diangana. That's why Mount.
No, I couldn't believe that. I was never buying the whole, he's playing because, defensively. No,
yeah,
I was
Diangana.
Never
buying.
Can I just emphasize though how massive Saturday is though? I don't feel like we emphasize it enough. Saturday is massive because we've been here before. We've been here all year where like the vibe is so it starts off good, then it starts weighing towards the middle. Yeah. It's creeping, and anyhow we get spanked 2-0, 3-0. Bruv, I'm telling you now, yeah, Lampard could be on the ropes. We've been here with Di Matteo. We've been here with Scolari. It takes just when it starts simmering and
show me, the fans are there to support him. They can't even sing Lampard's name in support. Yeah. You know what I'm saying,
bruv, it's lingering. You can feel the tension lingering among our fan base.
What's crazy is it's not just the international fans as well
anymore.
The English fans are starting to be
I'm telling you.
The English fans are backing their own,
especially with the news about again. We don't know if it's real stories. We don't know if it's real or true or not. But everyone, I think most players recognize that post lockdown, Christian Pulisic was our best player. Everyone could recognize that. So everyone then recognized again. Two games in a row now, we're starting Mason Mount on the left, ahead of Christian Pulisic, who was quite easily our best player. On the left wing last season, quite easily one of the best left attackers in the league post lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
So you're moving him, your best weapon from last season, to the right hand side to fit in a certain man. And then people are starting to question it like, oh, hold on. So it wasn't a Cho situation where, he's better than Cho. Oh, no, actually, because there's no way he's better than Christian Pulisic. There's no way. So they're thinking in their minds. They're doing the cogs are working in their minds now. It's like, there's no way. There's no way because Christian Pulisic pretty much helped us win. You know, get top four. So there's just no way. You know what I mean? So it's the cogs are starting to click and turn and turn and turn, and now they're starting to think, hold on a second, Frank actually might be taking a piss here. You know what I mean? So the cogs are starting to turn. They are starting to ask questions, and before you know it, was almost like blind support. Yeah. And now questions are starting to be asked.
I've seen Twitter accounts with English flags in the bio questioning Frank.
Coming on to Chezzy Hour. Wait, they're coming on to Chezzy Hour's account and saying, you know what, yeah?
You might be right, lads.
Yeah, they're like, we're seeing George and Harry message us like at us saying, oh, you know what, lads, you might be onto something here. I remember I saw a tweet today. I think it was new. And he was like, oh yeah, Frank Lampard. He labored a little bit of criticism to Frank Lampard. Yeah. And then I think another an English fan was like, you know what? This is refreshing to hear. Because a lot of people haven't really been critical of Frank. I was like, yo, is this what's happening now? You know what I mean? So that's why it's
crazy, bro.
So when Chevy says this is an important game, you've had your game. This is why.
I refuse to believe Lampard is that stupid. I refuse.
It's a massive game. It's a massive game. And if you think about it, it's a massive game, and Frank is going to try and play the players he trusts. And we all kind of know that Christian Pulisic, Frank wasn't his biggest fan when he first joined. He wasn't. And obviously Mason Mount was his go-to guy. So it wouldn't surprise me if Mount starts. As much as crazy as I think it is, and as wild, because tactically I don't see why he would play or start on the left-hand side. But it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me because the manager trusts the player. So it would not
start on the right, though. Why can't he start on the right?
But also, it comes to the point where when you play Mount so much, you almost feel like you need him just because that's what you're used to seeing. So you're like, we need him, because if not, but then don't forget the 4-0, which is probably our best, most convincing clean sheet and goals, he didn't play.
Even
play,
yeah.
So we don't.
Another manager is going to come in and play Mason Mount centre mid, and he's going to be a good player again.
Yeah.
And people need to understand that Mason Mount is a very good player centre mid.
He's a good player, but here's the thing. We're Chelsea. The squad is amazing. We don't necessarily need Ziyech. We need Mendy. But Max. most players we don't need. It's just Mendy that we need. And maybe Thiago Silva.
Can we talk about Mendy? Because I feel like Mendy, did we even touch on Mendy?
We
don't need to. But here's the thing with Thiago Silva and Mendy, the reason why you don't have to talk about them too much is they don't give you much to talk about.
That's how it's supposed to be.
I just want to say one thing. Innit? Because you don't know me and Kepa have had a very strange relationship ever since the
pandemic.
I was on this case from game one. Fam, look. I've seen enough in, what, 3 games to know that Mendy is significantly better. It's significant. When I mean significant, to the point where it'd be asinine not to recognise it. I know for certain, that deflected Zuma situation, that's 1-0.
Yeah.
That is 1-0. And then people would say there's nothing he could do. There would be people that would say there's nothing he could do. That Mendy flick out and the velocity he got on the ball as well to claw it out, bro. I don't need to add much else. I just know there's levels.
Yo, wait, quick. The Sevilla game, yeah? One time they went through. It was like, oh my god, what's gonna happen? Mendy came out of nowhere, blah,
boom,
just blah. I was like, raw. And you forget, because we've had Courtois, we've had Cech, but what Kepa makes look difficult, it's not even a situation with a tall goalkeeper.
Fam,
fucking out of the air.
He's good feet as well, by the way.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Remember the compilation. I think there was a compilation before you officially joined. There was a compilation. And people saying, oh, he's rubbish on the ball. Kepa's 10 times better on the ball, blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, okay. So then I've been waiting carefully to see if he's going to slip up and anything. But if you think about it as well, this is one thing that I've noticed. People think Kepa's good on the ball because he can pass, you know. But think about it. When he's put under pressure, Kepa is horrible. Because I've seen that Mane goal, I've seen that happen many times, not just them scoring it, to the point where he makes a massive mistake under pressure. Terrible. And it happens regularly. What people fail to understand is when you play for a big side, it's very rare, especially unless it's in the high-level games, it's very rare that your keeper's under pressure. So when they're not under pressure, they can clip it off. They can clip it. They can pass it. So Kepa will look like an amazing player on the ball. He'll look amazing for Chelsea because he's not getting pressed, but definitely at Athletic, Bilbao, pressed. When he's getting pressed, making mistakes. Again, Chelsea, when we're playing high-level games, getting pressed, making mistakes. When it's under the cosh, pressure. Getting pressed, making mistakes. Mendy, again. So where you look at him again in France, where you see that compilation where he's not really great on the ball, etc. Because he's playing for a lower side. You know what I mean? When you're playing for a poorer side, you're going to get pressed more. You know, the offense are going to try, the other opponents are going to try and press you more. They're going to be a bit more aggressive. But at Chelsea, he's going to have time on the ball. And quite clearly, he's comfortable.
I've taken the time to learn the correct pronunciation of my goalkeeper. It's Mandi. Because he's Mandi. French, right?
Oh, Mandi.
So man wow. like Mandi, yeah? Oh, man like Mandi.
Edouard Mandi.
Also, yeah.
That's not about his name. His name is French. His name is French.
No, but quickly. Anyone that says Kepa's good on the ball, Mandi is levels. Like, already I can tell he's much better on the ball. In terms of the even just passing, he's much better. So, yeah.
Kepa's done. And also, check for also. Another thing as well, what Jay was saying about sometimes you need that player to just ignore instructions and just do his thing. I don't know if you've not noticed yet, but Mendy does that. So, like, there's times, yeah, where he's rolled the ball out for a kick and he's telling him, go forward, man, I'm not doing this. I'm booting it long. And he'll just boot it long. Do you know what I'm trying to say? He'll just boot it long.
How old is he? Don't disgrace me.
He's 27, right?
28.
He's already. You can already tell he's got a personality, and he's very, very, very vocal, bro. Like, he doesn't play games. No, he don't run risks. You know what I mean? He don't do anything stupid.
I'm wounded. I didn't know much about Kepa, so I was like, let's find out.
Let's try it.
A couple of good things. I thought, okay, cool. So that's why I'm trying to protect my heart with Mandi.
The thing is, for me, there was not. I saw the first game, bro. I will never forget it. The Mkhitaryan shot, I will never forget it. I still remember it today. I still remember it clear as
vividly,
day.
Vividly.
That Mkhitaryan shot, it is that's 2 years ago, bro. That's 2 years ago. Two years and a month ago.
Oh, my God. That happened. You know the day. You celebrate the anniversary.
Bro, 2 years and a month ago, that happened, that goal. There was no way. I said, I even tweeted it. I'll even wheel up the tweet. This Kepa you is funny. He's a funny you. I knew it. Because you can see there's levels. And when you look at Mandi or Mendy, you immediately see a solid, at the very least, a solid goalkeeper. I don't want to talk about whether he's top five, whatever. I don't need to even get into that debate. All I can see is a solid goalkeeper. Solid. You know what I mean? And then I guess that when we're talking on the subject of goalkeepers, isn't it damning? Absolutely damning that we have registered a certain Chelsea legend, Munich legend, Petacek, 38-year-old technical director, technical and sporting director, Petacek, in the 25-man Premier League list. Certain clubs leave out people that are on 350k a week in the Premier League squads. We've enlisted our technical director as playing staff. Do you want to know how damning that is? That is damning on Kepa. That is damning. That is damning to the point where they are looking at Kepa as a sunk cost now. It's sunk cost. He is that bad. We have enlisted our 38-year-old technical director. That is insane. Absolutely insane. Dan, what are you
saying? I'm happy it's happened because I'm of the view that Kepa shouldn't even be making matchday squads, let alone starting. He shouldn't even be making the matchday squad. He should not.
So
you can't convince me otherwise.
This is what frustrates me, yeah? Where people say, oh, no, like, again, it's going to boil back to, oh, no, but that's all he has. Well, no. Whilst Caballero isn't a great goalkeeper, Willy Caballero is better than Kepa by a million miles.
It's not even an argument. It's not even a debate.
Do you know that Caballero is older than Cech?
Yeah, Caballero's 41.
He's older than Cech by like 8 months, isn't it? So like Cech, I'd rather Cech than...
By three years or so. Caballero's 40 something.
I think Caballero's 39.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I think he's 39.
But you know what the crazy thing was? Like, it was announced before the Southampton game. As the Southampton, like, the lineups came out, that's when it was announced that Cech was in the squad. And Kepa still... on that game, on his last chance when Cech was registered, still messed up. He's done. I don't want to see him again.
No. It was announced. It was announced before Sevilla.
And the thing about Kepa is, the thing about Kepa is, it's not even a confidence thing. Like, some certain man might try to use the cop out, like, oh yeah, like, his confidence is done, so he's going to keep making... No, I genuinely don't think it is actually in his DNA to make these mistakes. This is him. Like, we just need to accept that this is actually him. Like, people will say, oh yeah, under Sarri, he was solid, rare to tear.
What I would say, and it's funny, what I would say, Mr. Sarri, yeah, and I'm going to pay him his respects. Mr. Sarri,
you actually need to.
Definitely needs to be given his dues. Mm-hmm. Not only were we a lot more solid and resolute under Sarri with inferior players, not only was he getting the best out of Loftus-Cheek, and not only was he given, I guess, as much as it was frustrating at the time, but not only did he give Hudson-Odoi a platform to really showcase and develop and at least have a career plan for him over the next couple of years. I mean, he may have left, Hudson may have left or whatever, but I'd probably be happy if he left anyway. But at least he had something in mind, plan in mind.
Hazard as well,
having his best ever season. I think so. And he did all of this. He did all of this having an a super, super inferior goalkeeper, a disobedient goalkeeper. He did all of this.
And he finished third. Alonso.
Yeah, and he finished third. And he finished third. And he had he was a penalty kick away from winning the League Cup. I think some Jews need to be given to Sarri. I understand that Sarriistas are probably going to be rejoicing at this. I'm not Sarriista at all. But we need to be, it needs to be put into context what he achieved. I don't think that we really put it into context. I know we're all happy that he left to a degree, but
yeah,
we need to put into context as to what he's done and what he achieved at Chelsea, considering how handicapped he was. Because I'm sorry, Kepa is a handicap to our team. He's a handicap to our team. I don't. And then you add Alonso to the mix as well. Another handicap. Add Rudiger to the team. Another handicap. Add Morata too. Another handicap. Sorry.
Do you know how many individual errors that is?
Brother, that is millions. That's millions of problems. Putting it into context, what Sarri did was superb.
One thing I will say though, whilst I agree with that, Sarri definitely deserves his dues, and I feel like one time we need like a little segment for that. Yeah, on a defensive front, 100% deserves his dues. But I feel like one thing that I'm more happy about on this side of defense, Frank Lampard, is that so last season, the first thing I noticed in our first few games last season was instantly our chance creation was just up. Like with Sarri, if it was literally Hazard or die. Like Hazard, everything went through Hazard, and Hazard is so elite, like at his peak, yeah. That's cool because it can wash in it, because Hazard will make it happen and we'll get through the game, we'll win a trophy and we'll finish third on him. When Hazard left, yeah, it's like, okay, cool, we need to find a way to create chances and we can't even sign players. And the fact that Frank was able to do that, I feel like he deserves his dues, because people will say that people get onto Frank's philosophy, like, oh, there's no philosophy, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know, like, when you look at the stats here, I think our XG last season was like 2 goals per game. We're meant to have scored 72 goals. We scored 68. Mm-hmm. Our chance creation was a lot higher than it was under Sarri. I don't know if you guys remember. There's games, yeah. I remember the Fulham game. You remember when we won 2-0 against Fulham and Loftus-Cheek came off the bench and scored?
Yeah.
So we scored very early in that game with Pedro. And up until Loftus-Cheek scored, which was in like the 80-something minute, there was nothing.
There was nothing.
You know what I'm trying to say? And there were so many games like that. So I think Frank deserves his dues as well, in a sense of, you know, from the attacking front.
Me giving Sarri his dues isn't me trying to take away from Robert.
Yeah.
I did. For sure, last season, for me personally, our general attacking play was very, very good. We just always had a problem with finishing our dinner. And, you know, me and Jay have spoken at length about Tammy Abraham and his inability to read the flight of balls, read the flight of crosses, and, I guess, instinctive movement towards, you know, scoring goals.
I know we're wrapping up, but also Tammy and Hudson coming on for a minute, that I couldn't believe that.
It's terrible. So, but, again, here we are. And okay, so you know what? Them coming on for a minute isn't bothering me too much, right? What bothered me, the basic fundamental rules of making substitutions, right? Most managers, in fact, nearly all managers will never make substitutions when defending a set piece, an offensive set piece. Never. because certain players in that moment have certain rules and certain instructions that they need to carry out. When you're bringing on a brand new player, offensive player as well, what are you bringing them on for? What are you defending a set piece? What are you bringing them on for? They're having to learn who to pick up. There's confusion. What are you doing? He did that. If a goal went in, oh my God. Horrible, yeah. Horrible. That's one of the most basic fundamental errors I've ever seen. Terrible, terrible.
I think with Frank now, I just think, like, on wrapping this up and all that, I feel like, well, obviously, I'm still Frank in and I want him to be flipping successful at the club, innit? But what I will say, and I'm going to be harsh on it, bro, because I just feel like as much as you are learning and you're a young manager and whatever, you've had a whole season to understand what your weaknesses are in the team, mostly, yeah? And you're doing things like you're putting Aspilicueta under mad pressure against one of the best pressing sides in the league. You're not playing a very good right back in Reece James after he's had a very good game before that. Like, these little things that he's doing, you're playing centre backs in the wrong, like, right back, right centre back, left centre back. You don't know who's better where. You see all these little things. You keep making mistakes with these little things, and then the big ones like Mason Mount playing left and Pulisic on the right for 70 minutes of the game. Keep doing these little things, you will not be successful as a manager. It's as simple as that. Simple as that. But apart from that, we'll see what happens, innit? But
yeah, we'll see. Going off that, yeah, we'll see. I mean, look, we'll see how it goes. Big game against Manchester United, and obviously we're going to have a pre and post game analysis of what will be a very deadly day. And it's a big game because obviously Manchester United, if they win, they go above us. Currently on 8 points, they're currently on 6 points. So yeah, if they win, they go above us, which doesn't look good considering the start that Manchester United have had. So big game, and we'll be back next week, and hopefully off the back of a great win. And again, we're going to have a Champions League game next week as well. So yeah, two games to discuss next week. But yeah, we'll catch you guys later. Peace.
Guys later. Don't forget to share with all your friends and shit like that as well.
Yeah, you know the vibes. Like, share, subscribe, etc. But yeah, peace out.
When you're ready to ride Metro, we want you to know we're ready for you. Here are just a few of the people at Metro to tell you how we're doing our part to keep riders safe.
We're cleaning like never before. We're hospital-grade cleaning.
You'll find hand sanitizer stations all over the Metro.
No mask, no Metro. Need one? We have a few extras.
At Metro, we're doing our part to keep the DC area moving. Find out more at WMATA.com/doingourpart.
Sports Social Podcast Network.